1,000 images generated by NASA's Landsat 5, 7, and 8 satellites from 1985 to 2020 across the 8.5 million square kilometer of Brazilian territory. Without artificial intelligence, researchers could not have analyzed water changes across the country at the scale and level of detail needed. Artificial intelligence can also distinguish between natural and human-created water bodies. The Negro River, a major tributary of the Amazon River and one of the world's 10 largest rivers by volume, has lost 22% of its surface water. The Brazilian portion of the Pantanal, the world's largest tropical wetland, has lost 74% of its surface water. Such losses are devastating for wildlife. 4,000 species of plants and animals live in the Pantanal, including jaguars, tapirs, and anacondas. People and nature. Cassio Bernardino, World Wildlife Fund, Brazil's MAP Biomass Water Project lead, says, "Artificial intelligence technology provided us with a shockingly clear picture. Without artificial intelligence and machine learning technology, we would never have known how serious the situation was, let alone had the data to convince people. Now we can take steps to tackle the challenges this loss of surface water poses to Brazil's incredible biodiversity and communities." Number 3. Finding whales. Knowing where whales are is the first step in putting measures such as marine protected areas in place to protect them. Locating humpback whales visually across vast oceans is difficult, but their distinctive singing can travel hundreds of miles underwater. At National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association fisheries in the Pacific Islands, acoustic recorders are used to monitor marine mammal populations at remote and hard-to-access islands. Anne Allen, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association research oceanographer, says, "In 14 years, we've accumulated around 190,000 hours of acoustic recordings. It would take an exorbitant amount of time for an individual to manually identify whale vocalizations." In 2018, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Association, NOAA, partnered with Google Artificial Intelligence for Social Good's bioacoustics team to create a machine learning model that could recognize humpback whale songs. Four, protecting koalas. Australia's koala populations are in serious decline due to habitat destruction, domestic dog attacks, road accidents, and bushfires. Without knowledge of their numbers and whereabouts, saving them is challenging. Grant Hamilton, Associate Professor of Ecology at Queensland University of Technology in Australia, has created a conservation artificial intelligence hub, with Federal and Landcare Australia funding to count koalas and other endangered animals. Using drones and infrared imaging, an artificial intelligence algorithm rapidly analyzes infrared footage and determines whether a heat signature is a koala or another animal. Grant Hamilton used the system after Australia's devastating bushfires in 2019 and 2020 to identify surviving koala populations, particularly on Kangaroo Island. Grant Hamilton says, "This is a game-changer project to protect koalas. Powerful artificial intelligence algorithms are able to analyze countless hours of video footage and identify koalas from many other animals in the thick bushland. The system will allow land care groups, conservation groups, and organizations working on protecting and monitoring species to survey large areas anywhere in Australia and send the data back to us at the Queensland University of Technology to process it." Number 5. Counting species. Saving species on the brink of extinction in the Congo Basin, the world's second largest rainforest, is a huge task. In 2020, data science company Apsilon teamed up with the University of Stirling in Scotland and Gabon's National Parks Agency to develop the Mambaza Artificial Intelligence Image Classification Algorithm for large-scale biodiversity monitoring in Gabon's Lopé and Waka National Parks. Conservationists have been using automated cameras to capture species including African forest elephants, gorillas, chimpanzees and pangolins, which then had to be manually identified. Millions of pictures could take months or years to classify, and in a country that is losing about 150 elephants each month to poachers, time matters. The Mambaza artificial intelligence algorithm was used in 2020 to analyze more than 50,000 images collected from 200 camera traps spread across 7,000 square kilometers of forest. Mambaza artificial intelligence classifies up to 3,000 images an hour and is up to 96% accurate. Conservationists can monitor and track animals and quickly spot anomalies or warning signs, enabling them to act swiftly when needed. The algorithm also works offline on an ordinary laptop, which is helpful in locations with no or poor internet connectivity. Is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave radio, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, encouragement. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of encouragement or encouraging our kids in the Islamic lifestyle. When we talk about the family and the family life, and especially when we are talking about the training the kids, it is necessary to encourage them to perform good deeds, or maybe when they are performing some good actions, we must encourage them, we must applaud them, we must mark this activity which they have done in a good sense, so that they are encouraged to do more, to perform more. And this is one of the best ways of having kids following the path or the good path which they were following. So generally, we can see that unfortunately in our lives, when we see our kids doing something good, we never encourage them. We do not encourage them. We do not notice. We never notice that they have done something good. For example, when the kids are making noise and jumping here and there, we clearly notice that they're making noise. And then we ask them to stop making noise, or maybe some of us do give them some time out for some couple of hours in which we think that they are disturbing us, maybe if we are watching TV or working from home and all those things that we do. So we see them making noise, and maybe sometime we give them some time out, or maybe we get angry upon them. But whenever they are silent, we never notice it, and we never encourage them on what they're doing when they saw us being busy. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of encouragement or encouraging the kids in the training of kids. So we said that generally we see what our kids do. If they do something wrong, we generally notice it very quickly. But whenever they are good kids, they're not disturbing you. When you're praying, they're praying next to you. So we do not encourage them for the things they do good. So this shows us that we do not have the right way of looking at our kids, and we are not attentive towards our kids. Whereas if we see that our kids, they are praying, it is better to give them some gifts or anything which they like after a week or a month. Maybe, you know, when they start reading Quran, and if they have finished, for example, one juz, so you should give them some gifts. So they are encouraged to do more. And similarly, when the daughter is, for example, when you go out, she's observing hijab, when you come back, have some gift, have some kind of encouragement for them. Maybe you just praise them. Maybe, you show more love towards your kids. The gift can be anything. It's not just the material thing. We're not talking about the gift as the gift like chocolates or maybe a toy or anything else. It can be showing more love. It can be anything through which you can see that your kids, they realize that you're encouraging them, and they're encouraged and they're willing to perform that thing even more than before. So it is very necessary to have this encouragement in the family for the husband, for the wife, for the kids, in order to have an Islamic family, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Around a month ago, Israeli media reported that the Lebanese resistance movement, Hezbollah, has increased its drone activities in Israeli airspace. The drone operations were mainly for gathering intel. Last Friday, the Israeli military activated the Iron Dome and scrambled fighter jets, but failed to intercept a drone from Lebanon. As a result, air raid sirens were sounded in the north, and later it was announced that Israeli fighter jets were spotted flying low over Beirut. Hezbollah later released a statement saying the drone named Hassan entered Israeli airspace on a reconnaissance mission at a depth of 70 kilometers for around 40 minutes before returning untouched. This was the second incident in as many days and comes after Hezbollah's Secretary General Hassan Nasrallah said the group was making its own drones in Lebanon. Pointing to Israeli threats, the Hezbollah chief said the enemies only threaten others with war, but they know it will be very difficult and costly for them. He said Hezbollah is capable of upgrading the quality of its rockets to fend off Israeli threats. In fact, Hezbollah has been increasing its fleet of unmanned aerial vehicles, and now it is estimated to have some 2,000 UAVs. Based on Israeli media reports, Hezbollah is also in possession of over 100,000 rockets, and Israel's existing missile systems neither are capable of intercepting such a number of missiles and rockets, nor can protect Israeli settlers. The launch of the radio-controlled aircraft on Friday seems like a message from Hezbollah. Even if the Israeli military sometimes manages to shoot down Hezbollah's UAVs or drones, the resistance movement can keep sending them into Israel at will. If Israel believes it is free to violate Lebanese sovereignty with UAVs and fighter jets, Hezbollah will do the same south of the border.
It is interesting to see how fragile its entire military industrial complex actually is, and the latest event has just showed it once again that even though the Israeli regime is investing so many efforts in its so-called defense, it remains very weak, and it is the Lebanese resistance that continues to show the Israeli regime its own weakness.
Previously, retired Israeli General Yitzhak Brek warned that the Israeli military is not ready for any future war, especially a multi-front one. He predicted that in an extreme scenario, the resistance movements in Syria, Yemen, and Iraq, as well as Hamas in the Gaza Strip, will launch missiles and drones at Israel, so that the average number of rockets fired at the regime will reach 3,000 a day. Add to it reports during the Israel-Palestine conflict in May, when Israel's official military data indicated that the Iron Dome only destroyed fewer than half of the rockets and mortars fired by Hamas and Islamic Jihad resistance movements toward Israel. Therefore, in case of an all-out war, the Israeli regime would be vulnerable. While Tel Aviv sees its power waning, the resistance front has managed to increase its prowess. This is while Israel is trying to sell the Iron Dome missile system to Arab nations, but how can the Iron Dome work for them when it did not work for Israel?
This is why the entire existence of the so-called State of Israel in its current form necessitates the ongoing killing of people and ongoing expansion of its military complex. While at the same time, of course, it remains fragile. This is a very existential contradiction within the Israeli colony that eventually will also probably lead to its to the fall of the apartheid regime and the Israeli hegemony, supposed hegemony in the region.
The editor-in-chief of Rayal Yom newspaper, Abdel Bari Atwan, says a small drone that is worth only $100 manages to penetrate into Israel's airspace. Despite the Tel Aviv regime's costly military equipment and the Iron Dome system, He says Persian Gulf Arab states that are racing to buy this system from Israel should give it a second thought after the regime's failure against the Hezbollah resistance movement's drones. World leaders participated in the 58th Munich Security Conference in Germany, which is held annually. This year's conference was dominated by the Ukraine crisis, as major Western powers accused the Kremlin of zeroing in on an imminent invasion of Ukraine. In the conference, the U.S. Vice President, Kamala Harris, announced that Washington and its allies will impose significant and unprecedented economic costs on Russia if it further invades Ukraine.
We will impose far-reaching financial sanctions and export controls. We will target Russia's financial institutions and key industries.
Harris also added the U.S. will not stop with economic measures, but will further reinforce the eastern flank of NATO. Harris said some 6,000 additional service members are already deployed to Romania, Poland, and Germany. The official also noted that some 8,500 troops in the United States are on high alert. Also, another high-profile attendee in the 2022 Munich Security Conference, the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson, said Britain could block Russian companies from raising capital in London and has passed legislation to widen sanctions on Russian businesses and individuals if the country invades Ukraine. Johnson also stated that Russia would pay a heavy military price if it invaded Ukraine. Britain has already sent hundreds of troops to Poland to support NATO's eastern flank. However, the chairman of the Munich Security Conference, Wolfgang Eisinger, has highlighted the need for dialogue to resolve the differences. He said our world is in danger, traditional certainties are crumbling, threats and vulnerabilities are multiplying, and the rules-based order is increasingly under attack. He noted that the need for dialogue has never been greater. Meanwhile, Russia has time and again denied any intention to invade its western neighbor. It argues that it's deployed the military near Ukraine's borders to protect itself amid NATO's eastward expansion. Also, in a major step toward de-escalation, last week Moscow withdrew some of its troops near the Ukrainian border after completing military exercises. The U.S. President Joe Biden has ramped up his rhetoric against Russia amid mounting tension in Eastern Europe. He once again repeated his claim that Washington had intelligence showing his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, has made up his mind to invade Ukraine.
We have reason to believe the Russian forces are planning to and intend to attack Ukraine in the coming week, in the coming days. We believe that they will target Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, a city of 2.8 million innocent people.
Speaking at the White House, Biden warned that war will close the window for diplomacy with Moscow. Biden also said Western countries won't deploy troops in Ukraine, but will continue to bolster their defensive capabilities. Earlier, the White House said Washington and its allies are working on a sanctions package in case of a Russian invasion. This is while Italy says the ban should not target energy imports from Russia. This could throw the EU economy into mayhem or even negatively affect Russia's gas supplies to Europe. The EU is Russia's biggest trade partner. Nearly 38% of Russia's exports went to the EU, while over 36% of Russia's imports came from Europe. Russia is also the origin of 26% of EU's oil imports and 40% of EU's gas imports.
I don't think Russia cares so much and worries so much about Western sanctions, because Russia proved for the years, in spite of Western pressure and different sanctions, capable to sustain and even improving slowly, not so good as before, its economy. So sanctions are not the main threat to Russia.
The U.S. accuses Russia of planning an attack on Ukraine, but Moscow says that is not true. Therefore, the latest warnings, based on unfounded accusations that a Russian invasion of Ukraine is just around the corner, would further complicate the situation at this critical time.
Australian government announces a plan to blacklist the whole of Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. The country had previously designated Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades, back in 2003. Under the new restrictions, which will go into force in April, financing or providing any support to Hamas will be criminalized, with some offenses carrying a 25-year prison sentence. The reason for the blacklisting is what Canberra calls the group's, quote, hateful ideologies. But let's dive deeper and learn more about the Gaza-based group. Ever since Hamas scored a landslide victory in Gaza's parliamentary elections in 2006, it has been running the besieged enclave. Protecting the Strip has been one of the group's core responsibilities. Over the years, it has carried out the responsibility, the most recent instance of which came in May 2021, during the Israeli military's 11-day war on the Gaza Strip. The war killed some 250 Palestinians, including 66 children, but only 12 Israelis. If it weren't for the deterrent capabilities of the group, the number of Palestinian casualties would have been a lot higher. How would this justify branding the group as a terrorist organization? The case in point is that any group whose ideology goes against that of the U.S. and its allies is hit with such allegations. Hamas spokesman Hazem Qassem condemns Australia's decision to list the movement as a terrorist organization and calls on the Australian government to present an apology to the Palestinian people. He said the planned move attests to the biased support for the occupying regime and emboldens Israel to press ahead with its aggression against Palestinian people. The Islamic Jihad and the Popular Resistance Committees were also among Palestinian groups denouncing the decision. Voices of condemnation also came from inside Australia. The Australia-Palestine Advocacy Network, a national coalition of Australians who support Palestinian rights, disagreed with the designation, saying that it does nothing to advance the cause of peace and will only create more suffering for the 2 million people currently living under the 15-year Israeli blockade.
The word terrorist has been essentially coined and put into circulation by Zionists to demonize the people who are resisting their genocide in Palestine and the people all over the world who support that resistance. And in fact, the actual meaning of the word terrorism is deliberately targeting civilians to create fear or terror. And that is a military tactic that has been used since time immemorial by all sorts of different forces.
All in all, in the absence of any meaningful support for the people of Palestine and the condemnation of Tel Aviv, Israel continues to commit gross violations and gets away with murder.
The MKO terrorist group appears to be expanding its operations to include trafficking, among other criminal activities. An Albanian historian and journalist says the country's police have alerted the U.S. embassy that members of the terrorist organization are involved in various criminal activities in Europe, including human trafficking, with possible links to the Daesh Takfiri terrorist group. Alsi Jazeshi, citing Albanian media reports, says the MKO operatives, headed by the terrorist ringleader Mariam Rajavi and based in a camp near the capital Tirana, have attempted to traffic over 400 of the group's own members to France. Jazeshi added that a number of the terrorist cult's members have been detained for trafficking people from the Middle East to Europe, who were most likely Daesh terrorists. The journalist also says some senior MKO members, including the ringleader's sister-in-law, have been arrested while trying to traffic drugs into Italy, with police having prosecuted another member over theft charges. The Albanian police deny sending any letter to the American embassy without elaborating further. The journalist says the terror group has forced an Albanian media outlet to take down an article it published about the arrests.
They used Albania as a safe haven to carry out illegal activities and criminal acts. And now they are becoming a problem for Greece, Italy, Germany, and France. And when I say problem, not just trafficking human beings, drugs, money laundering, and some other activities. They have become a problem for Albania for the crimes I just mentioned, but also burglary, pickpocketing, harassing women, sexual harassment, and at least one case of rape.
Critics in Albania blame the United States and its Western allies for providing protection for the terrorist cult. Mujahideen Khalq Organization, MKO, also known as the MEK, is a notorious anti-Iran terror group that embraces an ideology that mixes Marxism and terrorism. MKO's crimes against Iran run the gamut from collaborating with Iraq's former dictator Saddam Hussein during the 1980 to 1988 war on Iran to a violent campaign of bombings across the country. One of the group's highest profile acts of terror came on June 28, 1981, when a powerful bomb went off at the headquarters of an Iranian political party, the Islamic Republican Party, where the party's leaders were holding a meeting. The bombing killed scores of Iranian officials, including the then head of Supreme Judicial Council, Ayatollah Mohammad Beheshti. Most recently, Iran said there were traces of MKO involvement in the assassination of Iran's top scientist Mohsen Fakhrizadeh in November 2020. The anti-Iran organization has long been recognized as a terror group by much of the international community. However, in June 2008, the United Kingdom crossed the group off its terror list. The move was followed by the European Union in 2009 and the United States in 2012. Canada followed in the footsteps of the Western countries in delisting MKO as a terror group in December 2012 without offering any reason for the decision.
Some of them have their hands stained with blood. Some of them have battlefield experience. Some of them have some formal training by Mukhabarat, the special secret police of Saddam Hussein. So they are not just poor people trying to go to Europe to make a living. They are a danger. Criminals need to go to prison, not to roam in the streets of European cities. Absolutely. This is my idea.
Since removing their decade-long ban on the MKO, the Western nations, especially the United States, have used the group as a tool to pressure Iran. But the latest revelations about the terror organization can serve as a wake-up call for its Western supporters that the threats they have been brewing against Iran will backfire on them.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio.
Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Ocean of Dua.
Allah, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In this edition of the program, we'll have a glance at Kumail's supplication and we'll discuss a commentary on that. We'll be back in a few seconds, so stay tuned. وَحَبَسَنِي عَنْ نَفْعِي بُعْدُ آمَالِي وَخَدَعَتْنِي الدُّنْيَا بِغُرُورِهَا وَنَفْسِي بِجِنَايَتِهَا وَمِطَالِي يَا سَيِّدِي فأسألك بعزتك ألا يحجب عنك دعائي سوء عملي وفعالي. Brothers and sisters, in this part of the Kumail supplication, Imam Ali alayhi salam says, وَخَدَعَتْنِي الدُّنْيَا بِغُرُورِهَا, and the world with its delusions has deceived me, وَنَفْسِي بِخِيَانَتِهَا وَمِطَالِي, and my soul with its offenses and my dilly-dallying have deceived me. Regarding this part, we discussed the concept of soul, its reality, from different aspects. We also had a look at the consequences of letting the reign of soul into the hands of our desires throughout the words of the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam and the verses of the Holy Quran. Now, the ending part, it says, وَمِطَالِي, and my dilly-dallying. This means, if we have a look at our own lifestyles, we find out that we have dilly-dallied for years. We have done nothing for asking repentance. It means we have done nothing in order to reform our souls. We haven't attained the provisions necessary for hereafter. We haven't brought enough good deeds. We haven't avoided sins. We have been seeking wisdom and insight, but not enough. This means the satisfaction with today and tomorrow has deceived us. This has prevented us from seeking the truth. O Allah, we ask you for a strong will and power to fulfill our promises so that we may be released for this idleness of ours. Because we are really weak, and this weakness would eventually harm us, deprive us from the mercy of the Almighty Allah, from His forgiveness, and this weakness will place us among the disobedient servants. So, when Imam Ali alayhi salam says, my dilly-dallying, وَمِطَالِي, this means I have also been deceived by my dilly-dallying, by this mital. This means I have not been firm in choosing the different sides. I have not been firm in choosing the side of the truth. And I haven't been firm in choosing the best procedures, in choosing the best lifestyles that you as our Lord have recommended us.
Oh Allah, my trials and sufferings have increased and my evilness has worsened. My good deeds have diminished and my misdeeds have become firm. And remote hopes restrain me from profiting with good deeds. And the world has deceived me with its allurements. And my own self has been affected by treachery and my delay. Therefore, my Lord, I ask you by your greatness not to let my sins and my misdeeds veil my supplications from you, and not to disgrace me by exposing those of which you have knowledge, nor to hasten my retribution for those vices and misdeeds committed by me in secret, which were due to evil-mindedness, ignorance, excessive lustfulness, and my negligence.
thank you, Allah.
Now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not a dream, this is so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
The ocean of dua.
Throughout the words of the Ahlul Bayt and the Infallibles, alayhimus salam, we have many examples of how truly a complete servant must live in this world. They have shown us the true lifestyles of the obedient servants, the true meaning of servitude, which is supplication, which is reliance on the Almighty Allah, has also been referred to. And in this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam continues, Ya Sayyidi, فَأَسْأَلُكَ بِعِزَّتِكَ أَنْ لَا يَحْجُبَ عَنْكَ دُعَائِي سُوءُ عَمَلِي وَفِعَالِي. In this part, Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about one of the most important matters in our supplication. He says, O my Lord, I ask you by your might not to let my evil deeds and my evil acts veil my supplication from you. Brothers and sisters, now that Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about supplication in this Kumail supplication itself, فَأَسْأَلُكَ بِعِزَّتِكَ أَنْ لَا يَحْجُبَ عَنْكَ دُعَاءِ سُوءُ عَمَلِي وَفِعَالِي, he's saying that some of the evil deeds, some of our evil acts are veiling our supplications from the Almighty Allah. But the question is, what is the use and benefits of acceptance of our prayers by the Almighty Allah? In this regard, we have to consider two important benefits, one greater than the other. The minor benefit of supplication, of course, is the very fulfillment of the request. It's the fulfillment of the petition made by the supplicant to the Almighty Allah, be it regarding this world or hereafter or both. But the greater benefit is the response itself from the Almighty Allah. It's the ijabah, because every response involves a turning from the Almighty Allah towards His servant. Every prayer entails a turning of the servant toward the Almighty Allah. Brothers and sisters, we will, God willing, talk about this important phrase of supplication kumail and the concept of supplication more in the episodes to come. Thank you for staying with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
History shows a gun barrel never stops people from acquiring their learning tools. A bookshop in the besieged Gaza Strip is a testimony as book lovers flooded the store months after it was flattened in an Israeli airstrike. The new Samir Mansour bookshop, funded by an international donor campaign, now stands some 200 meters from its original site. It was destroyed by an Israeli airstrike on the west of Gaza City last year. The new shop is spread across two floors and is stocked with some 400,000 books. They range from school texts to the Quran to Arabic translations of European literary classics. Hundreds of people, including writers and Palestinian officials, attended the bookshop's reopening. The store first opened its doors 30 years ago and is considered the oldest and the biggest in Gaza. Hundreds of Pakistani youths have flown their kites from rooftops in the city of Rawalpindi, celebrating an ancient tradition despite a ban imposed on the festival. People buy or make their own kites to participate in the festival, marking the arrival of spring. Local fairs are also held on this day, where families meet and vendors sell food and decorative clothing. Many people wear different shades of yellow to welcome the new season. The festival can become competitive too, with kite-fighting battles. In pursuit of victory, some kite flyers started using powdered glass of metal or metal on their kite strings to cut down other kites. The event was prohibited in 2007 after a slew of fatal accidents. The 37th edition of Fajr International Music Festival has wrapped up with an awards ceremony. During the annual event, music bands from Iran and the world took to the stage to perform their tunes. Yusuf Jalali has more.
From Iran's genuine traditional music to Italian tunes and Afghanistan's Qawwali music, music bands from many parts of the world have been performing on the stage of Iran's Fajr Music Festival. The 37th edition of the week-long event now came to an end with an award ceremony in Tehran, with best music performances cheered and awarded.
In the past 2 years, when the pandemic has cancelled concerts, my team focused on producing albums. I produced three albums, and one of them, titled Prime Meridian, won the award tonight.
Fortunately, I won the award for Best Composer tonight. I'm so glad that I was recognized and my work has been seen and appreciated in Iran's most prestigious music festival.
Italian jazz pianist Giovanni Guidi Egyptian oud virtuoso Mohammed Abu Zikri and German pianist Moritz Ernst were among the participants who performed during the festival. As the host, Iran had a strong presence with pop, classic and traditional music ensembles performing in the festival. Music bands say Fajr Festival is one of the most ethnically diverse music events, where musicians with different nationalities can enjoy each other's performances.
No nation is at war with any other nation. It's the politics that imposes wars and divides nations. Now, such festivals help different nations to come together and listen to each other's music. This definitely bridges the gaps caused by politics.
Fajr International Music Festival is held as part of the nationwide celebrations in Iran, marking the victory of the 1979 Islamic Revolution. After a two-year hiatus, the 37th Fajr Music Festival was held in person, but with a limited capacity amid the spread of the Omicron variant of the coronavirus.
Fudge Music Festival offers a rare chance to listen to live music performances from different parts of the world. And this is where music transcends boundaries and interconnects nations, as it is a universal language that everyone can feel for and enjoy, no matter where they come from. I'm Yusuf Jalali in Tehran.
The city of London usually welcomes art and culture from all over the world, including Iran. In our next report, Bianca Rahimi will be taking us to a performance that fuses music from across the East.
A dream has become a reality. The Conference of the Birds, composed by the brilliant young musician Mehsan Marvasti and inspired by a poem of the same name written by poet Attar of Nishapur in the 12th century, performed here in London. It's a story all Iranians are familiar with, about an epic journey to find the Simurgh.
The Simurgh is to the east what the phoenix is to the west, a mythical creature that symbolizes transformation. And the story of the Simurgh is a spiritual one, full of courage, determination, and self-discovery.
Well, I think it's the first time I've seen so prominently advertised a non-Western musical traditional concert. And I've got a long-standing interest in music from the different parts of the Islamic world. It kind of evokes sort of deeper feelings, spiritual feelings. And the fact that this specific concert is about kind of a spiritual poem, it taps into something which I think a lot of us are looking for, especially in this post-pandemic, current pandemic situation. We're looking for some deeper meanings. So I think it will be striking a chord for a lot of people.
It's a mix, a fusion of different music, and that's always interesting, and it's Eurasian music, and it uses different instruments from across Asia to represent birds, and it just sounded lovely.
Even though there are differences, cultural differences between these places and these peoples, and those differences should be recognised in general, but through things like music and art, there can also be synergy, and things can work together as well.
5 years in the making, the Conference of the Birds, conducted by Farnoush Behzad, brought together musicians and instruments from across the world. It fuses Azeri, Chinese, Indian, Arabic, Afghan, Armenian and Persian music, brought to the audience by a Western orchestra. The performance was accompanied by two elocutionists who narrated the story and animated clips of birds and their migratory lives. The art and culture of Iran needs no introduction, renowned worldwide. But young Iranian artists living far from home are always looking for ways to capture the spirit of their homeland and offer Western audiences a taste of Iran. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Axolotls are unique Mexican amphibians at risk of extinction, and many conservation programs are now trying to save these strange-looking animals. An ecological park in Mexico City is the latest place to celebrate them. It has held a ceremony for releasing baby axolotls into their natural habitat, which is the mud. These amphibians are so special that even a number of city officials attended the event. Conservationists say having a clean environment is key to their survival.
I've managed to breed up to 22,000 axolotls. In all of Xochimilco, there are 90 axolotls across 90 kilometers, but the quality of the axolotls depends on the quality of biologist you are. Bad quality water has killed anywhere from 12,000 to 15,000.
Researchers have discovered that axolotls can absorb oxygen from the surface of their skin and are therefore more vulnerable to dirty water and environments. More than 70 breeding centers across Mexico have joined the rally of saving these critically endangered species. Many are even marketing them as ideal pets, but to animal advocates, keeping axolotls as pets is a definite no-no.
And for those who are interested in archaeology, the remains of 14 mummies have been unearthed at an ancient site in central Peru. The mummies, believed to be over 1,000 years old, include 6 children and 8 adults. The tomb containing the bodies was found at an archaeological complex about 25 kilometers from the capital, Lima. Researchers discovered other objects such as clay pots, decorated calabashes, and some knitting gears near the mummies. They believe the children and adults were sacrificed in honor of a prominent local figure whose mummified body was found last November in the same area. Van Dalen says the discovery provides them with the oldest evidence of child sacrifice associated with the burial of an elite character in the pre-Inca era. The city of Cajamarquia, which was built out of mud in around 200 BC, is considered as one of the largest archaeological complexes in Peru.
A miniature bull in Germany's Bavaria is proving that size does not matter, as the small bovine makes himself comfortable in his new herd at an animal sanctuary. This tiny bull had a lucky escape and was rescued from a farmer who was taking him to a slaughterhouse. The mini cow is named Napoleon and was born with a genetic defect. Just 8 months old, the diminutive bull has already reached his full size. Napoleon might be small, but he is mighty and daring, as he is not afraid of joining a herd consisting of big and huge animals.
Napoleon belongs to the Dexter breed, which produces rather small cattle anyway. They grow up to be about 1.2 meters. With his 80 centimeters, he's of course far below that. Despite his size, he feels like a complete bull and is in a good mood. He has settled in with us very quickly, which we are very happy about. He also has a lively effect on the herd.
The little bovine now lives with 100 other rescued livestock. His rescuers say he gets along with other animals and has already become friendly with another rescued cow. The Dexter is a breed of cattle first originated in Ireland. They are usually bred for high-quality meat and milk. An Indonesian man frees a crocodile of a tire that was stuck around its neck some 6 years ago. Tilly, a self-taught rescuer and resident of Central Sulawesi province, captured the reptile and cut the tire using a small saw with the help of some locals. The animal had been too smart to be trapped. Tilly says he had been tracking the reptile for weeks using a basic trap with a rope tied to a log. He used live chickens and dogs as bait to lure the reptile. The crocodile drew the sympathy of local residents who worried the tire would choke as it grows in size. Tilly says his main motive was to help animals, claiming it was not his first experience dealing with a crocodile.
IRIB English Radio.